You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
What's up, you bunch of bitches? Welcome to a spillover bonus episode of Cinema Crespediso. What? Shit, I should have had like drink horns and gunshots.
You can try
to turn this into a hip hop show.
That soundboard exists. You know it does.
It does exist. I never got it. I have this one, though. I have this where I can be like, what's up, bitches? Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
Do you feel in charge?
That doesn't really work.
It would be extremely painful for you.
For you. I like the little addendum at the end. For you.
For you. For me?
Guys, it's me, Andrew Sakagrun. How's it going, Drew?
What up, dude?
I had a couple OBP squared, so I'm drunk.
Awesome. Congratulations.
On an empty stomach. I ate after I drank.
You did that opposite.
I know.
You're supposed to do it the other way around.
I really fucked it up. It didn't work out the way I wanted it to. It's way later than I wanted. But whatever. Here we go. Welcome to a bonus episode of Cinema Crespediso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo. Hang out with Justin Cockburn.
You already said this, Chris.
Tell people where they can find you online.
At Antihero419. All over the interwebs.
All over the interwebs. Yeah, it's that easy. You can tweet me at I am Chris Crespo. Tweet the show at Crespediso. Usually the spillover bonus episodes when we catch up with movie news, we're going to do a little bit of that. But first, Drew wasn't here this past weekend. We had guest co-host Steve Etchy sitting in for us. Drew, our scheduled guest no-showed on us.
Really? Did he at least call?
I contacted him and he was like, oh shit, what time is it? And I was like, late in the afternoon on a Sunday. So that's going to get rescheduled. But Etchy was here. We had a great episode. Still almost over a two-hour episode just being Etchy. The first half was over an hour.
What the hell did you guys talk about?
Exactly. I'm not sure. I went back and looked at the notes. The notes are normal.
Nothing.
But we did it, though. We did it.
Somehow you yapped for an extra 45 minutes.
We just talked and talked and talked. So extra 30. I mean, the first half is usually 30.
Ridiculous.
30 to 45. We want an hour. But you're back, so since you're back, I want you to let people know what you thought of the Belko experiment. I gave my review last weekend, but you weren't here, you saw the movie. Drew, what did you think of the Belko experiment?
Well, I mean, you know, like, almost a week later, it really hasn't stuck with me. I mean, pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
For it being kind of like a battle royale type of thing, where, like, these people are specifically told to kill each other.
It never really goes that route, though.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's got that setup, but they never go that route.
Which really disappointed me, because I was kind of looking forward to like, this is going to be like some weird postal movie, where it's a bunch of people locked in an office building, and they're just going to murder the fuck out of each other.
Yeah.
This could be fun.
Yeah.
It was not that movie.
Yeah, I thought
it wasn't all that fun either.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be something crazy and over the top and, like, gross. And I was expecting it to be, like, wincing and...
I mean, it had notes of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Hints, but nowhere near as good or as funny.
Or thoughtful.
At all.
Yeah.
I mean, if you would have asked me on Sunday, I probably would have reviewed it maybe a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because it was fresh.
It was so fresh.
It was still fun.
And it's competently made. It's well made.
No.
And then what does happen in the movie, it's like well presented and it's all the actors are fine.
Yeah, but I'm not going to tell anybody to like rush out and see this movie.
No, it's not one of those.
Even when it comes out on DVD, people are going to be like, hey, Drew, should I see this movie? And I was like, that all depends. Can you find a better way to kill 90 minutes?
Yeah, you got
it. Because if you can, go do that.
Like, you got an hour and a half to kill?
if you can't do that, then sure, watch the Belko experience.
Yeah, it's not like the guest one we were like...
go.
Everyone see this movie as soon as you can.
What do you have? Do you have a spare 90 minutes? Yeah. Yes. Well, then watch that fucking movie.
Yeah, or we saw John Wick. Was like, go see John Wick, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, no, you can totally, if you never see this movie, you will. It will not change your life.
Bit of a bummer. Anyway, if you want a workplace slash horror film type of thing, I would recommend the movie Severance. It's a British film from 6 or 7 years ago, maybe longer. I saw it at a midnight screening at the Florida Film Fest, I think, forever ago, before we were covering it as a podcast. And it's a bunch of people, it's an English film, a bunch of people on an office retreat. One of these things where like the whole office has to go out on a weekend somewhere, and they're out in the woods, and like their bus breaks down, and they try to hike to the cabin or whatever, and there's someone out there that wants to kill them.
Sweet.
It's actually pretty good.
Awesome.
So I recommend people check out the movie Severance. Instead. Also, I have a movie review for people I figured I would throw in as well.
Okay.
I saw, it's not on HBO Now. I wanted to see it at the Florida Film Fest last year, but it's one of those things where multiple movies get scheduled. You gotta make harsh decisions. I saw something else. Now I can't remember what it was. It might have been like Morris from America or something. Yeah. Something amazing. Who knows? But this movie played at the Florida Film Fest. I missed it. Heard a lot of great things about it since then. Finally watched it last night on HBO. Drew, I recommend you watch it like ASAP.
Yeah, because I have spare time.
Yeah, way more spare time than I do. Tickled. Remember that one from the programming last year? Tickled. Documentary. Tickled. It's about some sort of quote competitive tickling league.
What?
All right, Drew. The setup is it's a New Zealand film, actually.
Okay, Kiwis.
A reporter from down there who he writes about like the weirdos in life. He's one of these like slice of life reporters, right? And he finds online the competitive tickling, and it's like ads looking for young dudes to enter into this thing, and it's like decent pay. You get put up in a good hotel, you get flown out to LA, blah blah, all this shit enticing all these dudes to do competitive tickling. And you watch a couple videos online, he's like, this is weird as fuck. So I'm gonna contact this company, Jane O'Brien Media. I'm gonna contact them and talk to them and see what's up. I just want to, you know, ask them, do an interview. And he got stonewalled, and he did not like that. He's like, this is interesting, why don't they want to talk about this? So he had his buddy, who does like IT work, do a little digging, and they found some shit, and they're like, this is really weird. So they tried to contact them even more, and oh man, the shitstorm started, and the rest of the movie is like, what? Dude, crazy. So
it has,
shit.
It probably has very little to do with actual competitive tickling.
Yeah, they show a number of competitive tickling videos. I'm still trying to figure out what the competition is.
Okay.
There's no, even one dude had to be, in one video, he was wearing like a referee shirt, but then he was doing tickling too, and I was like, he doesn't seem to be.
So this is just a bunch of dudes touching each other.
It's a bunch of dudes tickling. It's one dude tied down, and then other dudes tickling him, and then him like laughing uncontrollably and whatnot. And when the Kiwi guy, when the reporter tried to investigate the company and talk to them, man, they were so antagonistic towards him. And then they started throwing around so much money to shut him down that he was like, I have to know. They made it worse. Like, they provoked him into investigating even more. And he uncovers the whole thing. It's worth it. It is so worth it. You gotta. Weird. Oh my God. You don't even know.
The fact that you just said they threw a bunch of money, that means that they have a bunch of money to throw around.
So much money. And you find out by the end of the movie. By like all the way towards the end, you find out. No, dude, I'm telling you, by the end of the movie, you find out where the money comes from, who's behind it.
I don't understand.
I'm telling you, Drew, it's all answered in the documentary, and it's fantastic. Also, kind of weird. You would find this interesting. Of only a small percentage of people would find this interesting. I think you are one of them.
Okay.
Half of the soundtrack for the movie is the Upstream Colors soundtrack.
Even stranger.
Right? Well, I was like, is this?
So now you're making a really weird movie with an even stranger, less well-known soundtrack.
Yeah, well, they can get away with it. All the dreamy stuff. And I was like, this is Upstream Color. So funny. Like, not even, it was like straight up, they just bought the rights to it and used some of the songs.
Weird.
Hey, good for Shane Cruz getting some of his money back on that production, surely. Man, it is worth it. It's a good movie. Tickled. Okay. The documentary. Now it's on HBO.
Sure.
So that's how people can watch it. I highly recommend it. I mean, within 10 minutes, you get thrown that first curveball. And you're like, what?
Okay,
and then,
sure.
And then they keep coming.
All right, you say so.
It's incredible. That's actually damn good. So there you go. I recommend seeing that. But Drew doesn't necessarily recommend seeing Belko Experiment.
Yeah,
so
two, you can miss it.
So starting with two quick movie reviews. Talk about Kong : Skull Island. The number two movie of this past weekend. It made a decent amount of money. So I was afraid that the movie was so weird that it would kind of drop really quickly. You know, in the box office, and it wouldn't make back its gigantic budget, its summer movie budget. But it had an okay second weekend. It might do well. I'm hoping it'll do well. Because I like the direction. I like the guy, the director. And I want to see this King Kong vs. Godzilla, right?
Well, that, I mean, you got to realize, Chris, this is that time of year where, I mean, this is, it's not the summer. People don't have time off. It's not like...
That is correct. People do not have time off.
You know, it's not like, you know...
Kids are in school.
The first couple weeks are going to make or break a movie, you know?
Mm. But when you're sandwiched between Logan, which had an over $80 million opening weekend, good word of mouth, sucking in audiences, and Beauty and the Beast, the biggest PG-rated opening of all time, all of a sudden the marketplace got shrunk, even though you're in the middle of March. You know? Mm. When you find yourself between crazy, the way I see it, movies.
as long as they keep it in theaters for an extra couple weeks, it'll make its money.
Yeah, well, that's up to the exhibitors. We'll see about that. Unrelated, I actually saw today exhibitors, I think we talked about this on the show before, the theatrical window, when a movie comes out, the movie theaters, the exhibitors, they want a 90-day window.
Before it goes on streaming DVD. DVD or blah, blah, blah.
Studios, meanwhile, they're trying to kill that. They've been trying to kill it for years. They want movies available. They just want to make their money quickly as possible.
In all reality, if they could sell you a DVD copy as you walked out of the theater from seeing the movie, they fucking would.
Yes, they would. 100% they would. Absolutely. Whereas the movie theater would be like, don't you want another ticket? Yeah. And the studio's like, don't you want the DVD? Because the DVD
you can buy it right now.
100% correct. Studios are now, they're trying to work out a thing where if a movie hits a certain amount of screens, a screen count, then it's available on DVD. So if a movie comes out on 3,000 screens and then 4 weeks later it's down to 1,000 screens, DVD.
Interesting.
Which is like, what? And that makes it a sliding scale, and then you never know when nothing's coming out. Man, I don't know. The movie industry is crazy. Talking about that Kong Skull Island. Wild opening sequence. The Japanese kamikaze pilot, the American pilot, they crash land on Skull Island. They fight. Kong shows up, blah, blah, blah. Director and writer Jordan Boat Roberts had a different idea for an intro.
Okay.
And the studio actually shot it down. That movie is weird as fuck. Yeah. And the studio was still like, this is too much. We can't do this. It was his alternate opening, and I'm just going to read his quote straight up. He says, my alternate opening to that, I'm going to get in trouble for this. To the movie that I initially pitched, they said, you're crazy. We can't do that. Was World War II. I was like, oh man, like a full squad comes to this beach, and they're just like killing each other. Just island warfare. They're battling each other and battling each other, and suddenly this giant monkey that looked a lot like the monkey in the last Kong movie comes out of the jungle, and they kill it, and it's dead. And you just sit there being like, did they just do that? They just kill King Kong? They just kill the hero of this film? And then you would hear this roar and see this much bigger creature that's our creature, and would be like, oh, that's this movie, end quote.
Interesting.
He wanted to bring out Peter Jackson's Kong and kill it. Shoot it. Have a bunch of soldiers shoot it dead on a beach.
I'm cool with that.
That would have been amazing.
It would have been, it would have been very significant. Like, listen, this is how I feel about the original King Kong.
Yeah, this is our Kong.
Fuck this shit. Murder that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Bring out the big guy.
Yes, that would have been wild.
I mean, and you know, seriously, with as crazy as that movie was, I don't think anybody would have given a shit either way if that's the way it would have opened.
It would have fit in perfectly with the tone of the rest of the movie, and I think it's more like Warner Brothers not wanting to piss off Peter Jackson. Because he's still a pretty big name. They may want to work with him down the road.
I mean, sure.
You know, it's Hollywood.
I get that.
They're all sucking each other's dicks until they figure they can't make each other money, and then you're out
but
the
I'm
door.
Not sure if Peter Jackson is capable of making a movie that's not J.R.R. Tolkien related.
At this point, it's been so long, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure
of his last seven movies, six of them were J.R.R. Tolkien related.
I'm pretty sure he's a hobbit now.
Someone check his feet.
Like, he's just a reclusive hobbit living wherever, you know, just getting stuff from Weta Works done and call it a day.
Yeah.
That's it.
Probably. You know what? Someone checking on Peter Jackson.
He lives in a hobbit hole.
I think he's a hobbit. Kurt Russell.
Uh-huh.
He plays Ego the Living Planet in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Mm-hmm. First off, have you seen the picture of him that they released?
No.
As Ego the Living Planet, as no. Peter Quill's father. Here it is. Here's the picture. You ready for his weirdness?
Sure. Not that weird.
It's just him. It's just him with an amazing head of hair and a great beard.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go for that haircut, too. I'm going to grow it out and go for that. I'm going to go. Sure. I'm going to walk into a Supercuts and be like, give me this. and then I'm going to walk out looking like Weird Al Yankovic. I think we even talked about this before, but it came up again. I just want to reiterate this because I find this interesting. Kurt Russell, he hadn't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, the 2014 movie, when he was offered the role of Peter Quill's father, Star-Lord's father. So to woo him, Marvel, James, etc., a copy of Guardians of the Galaxy. It was like, just watch the first one. If you like it, come be in the second one. So Kurt Russell put the movie on, sat down. This is what he says, quote, 15 minutes in, I said, I think I see why they're coming to me. The baggage I bring from some of the movies I've done is the right kind of baggage to bring into this one, end quote. So he sees, after watching 15 minutes into Guardians of the Galaxy, he's like, oh, I can see how I fit into this universe, into this world, etc., etc. He's mentioned before, too, that they sent him a copy of the movie and he watched it. He was like, oh, this is different from what I expected,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I'm totally excited for Kurt Russell, man. Yeah.
Definitely.
Between that and Fast and Furious?
I mean, yeah, it could be cool.
Can we have a Kurt Russell Assance? It doesn't work the same as a McConaissance.
I mean, we could.
We should.
But I have a feeling if he does, then, like, right in the middle of it, he's just going to die.
No. We can't have that.
He's too old.
We can't have that. I don't think he's that old. 60s?
Oh, he's old.
Probably
he's
60s.
He's older than he looks.
Mid-60s. He does look great. I'm almost positive, like 100% positive, too. He's like libertarian hardcore right, which is like, if I ever got to sit down with him, it's like, let's talk about The Thing and nothing else.
Because if we start talking about personal life, politics, stuff like that, I'm probably going to want to murder you.
If we start talking about the world, I might start hating you, and I don't want to hate you. You're Kurt Russell. You're amazing. I'm seriously going with him. I'm going to go for the Kurt Russell.
Sure.
Let's see. Uh-huh. Let's see. Yeah, I mean. It's gonna end up being that, or it's gonna be the Butthead. I don't know.
I mean, you
one
you,
way or the other.
You were going for Kurt Russell in The Thing before you had to chop it all off.
Oh, I went beyond Kurt Russell in The Thing. And I went into Dragon Force territory for a while there. I had to cut that shit. I don't want people thinking I'm some sort of spick Viking. I'm allowed
some
to say
of,
it.
Some sort of brown skinned wizard.
Which you know are the evil wizards,
yeah,
right?
Uh huh. Of course.
We can't have that now.
Yeah, no.
No, Merlin is white as shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's why he's good. Yeah. Uh huh.
What are we talking about? Logan. Fantastic movie. Yeah. We already mentioned. It's super good. James Mangold, the director. He directed this in The Last Wolverine movie. Only two comic book movies he's done. Before The Wolverine and this.
I mean, pretty much the only two passable X movies.
Yeah, you are. Well, people who listen to the show know you are not a fan of most of the X-Men movies. Yeah, no. But you like the newer ones, though.
They're slightly better, but they're still not...
They're still not up to snuff for you. Even Days of Future Past?
It was...
Man.
That one's probably the closest.
The closest of all of them, but still. Yeah. But even now with Logan.
I mean, Logan's by far the best of them all.
But it's also a different beast. Logan is not even the X-Men movie.
Well, and that's why I like it so much.
Probably, right? Because, they went really far down that path. Yeah. Well, James Mangold, whereas you're not the biggest fan of the X-Men movies in general, also X-Men Apocalypse I saw is on HBO now, and I want to watch it again just to be like what the fuck happened? Like, why didn't this work?
So much of this was supposed to be awesome.
This should have been amazing. Mangold, besides those two Wolverine movies, hasn't done any other comic book movie. The closest thing he's done to a comic book movie outside of those films is like 3:10 to Yuma, mm-hmm. right? Or Copland.
Yeah.
So someone asked him specifically about the why he went the direction he did with Logan, his view of comic book movies in general. And wouldn't you know it, James Mangold, not a fan at all of comic book movies.
It doesn't, which is why we got the movie that we did.
Which is why we got Logan.
Which is fine with me.
Makes a little more sense, right? Here's his quote. 10, tentpole movies in general. So not even just comic book movies, but tentpole movies in general. They are not movies. They are bloated exercises and two-hour trailers for another movie they're going to sell you in 2 years. There are so many characters that each character gets an arc of about 6.5 minutes at best. And I'm not exaggerating. You take 120 minutes. You take 45 of it for action. What you are left with, divided by six characters, you have the character arc of Elmer Fudd in a Warner Brothers cartoon. That formula is empty for me. So there you go. So instead he makes Logan, which focuses on three characters. And does so amazingly well.
Uh-huh.
Amazingly well. For what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a you know, a Citizen Kane or even like an Ordinary People level of drama or something.
No, but it's for bringing
a Wolverine movie.
It's bringing it from comic book to like actual, like almost drama.
To art.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's elevating pop art, mm-hmm. which is James Mangold, I feel like, is a director who he's always made good movies, but he's never made a great movie.
Yeah.
Until now. I think Logan is great. It's his first great movie after like 30 years.
Yeah.
And he's always had he's been one of the more frustrating directors for me to follow. Like, Copland is good, really good, should be great. I think it's aged well,
mm-hmm.
But it should have been like a Goodfellas or a Casino or something.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And it falls short of that. 3:10 to Yuma is another one where like I feel like other people like it more than I do. Like, I mean, I want to like it more.
I like parts of it. I like parts of it, and I like pieces of the movie as well. You know, like specific actors and whatnot.
Yes, yes. But I feel like
the ending
didn't
like,
do it for me. Yeah, it was a bit of a slog when it was all over. I was like, I should have just watched the original from the 70s or 60s or whatever. I got what you're saying. People who follow Cinema Crespediso know that there are certain movie franchises, IPs, whatever, that I like to. Whenever there's any sort of news bit at all, I chime in on them. I let people know what's going on. One of those franchises, I don't even know why I keep doing it, but I do. The Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
Got some conflicting reports on The Terminator.
Okay, well, I mean, we know it's going back.
Going back to James Cameron for sure, by 2019. Like, he gets the rights, and I even think ahead of that rights going back to him, indefinitely, no matter what, there's nothing that can be done to stop that. The current producers of the movie are working with him. Like, we know you're coming on, let's just get this going now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'll get to that in a second. First off, Paramount. They're the ones that have been releasing the last few Terminator movies.
Mm-hmm.
They've been producing them, co-producing them, and they announced that their, quote, sequel to Terminator Genisys that no one wants is off the schedule.
Okay.
They also announced Emilia Clarke not coming back.
Sweet.
But no, they announced, it's weird. Warner Brothers, Paramount said, we are not bringing back Emilia Clarke, which is weird because, like, 8-9 months ago, Emilia Clarke said, I'm not going back to Terminator.
No.
So it's like, well, no, you can't quit. We fire you.
Whatever. That's fine. Neither of them liked the movie, and it's because the movie is a piece of shit. The
movie is a piece of shit, and also Emilia Clarke, as much as I like her as a Mother of Dragons and Game of Thrones, not a good Sarah Connor. Very miscast, I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, she's, literally, she's physically too small.
Yeah.
You know?
She's like 3 feet tall.
Yeah, like Linda Hamilton's kind of tall and lanky, and then for T2, she worked out and got all jacked and shit. So anyway. Even when they did the TV show, they got Cersei from Game of Thrones, Lena Headey, who exudes power.
Yeah.
Right? So, anyway. They also said Schwarzenegger not coming back.
Which is fine.
Which is fine, because he's an old fucking man.
Yeah. The Terminators aren't supposed to age anyway.
But it's weird. No, but they found a good explanation for why the Terminators do. That's one of the few things I liked about Terminator Genisys. Like, okay, they actually...
The skin on top ages, but the rubber underneath doesn't.
Because it is living tissue. Uh-huh. Like, okay, I'll buy that. That's fine. But Paramount said, nah, we're not happening anytime in the future. Now, the thing with Paramount and these Terminator movies, at least with the last one, Terminator Genisys, co-produced by Skydance Media. Does that name sound familiar to you? You remember Skydance thing that pops up in front of movies? Like, maybe for a few years now? Like, 4 years now? The guy who runs that is David Ellison. David Ellison is the sister of Megan Ellison.
David's the sister.
David is the sister. Both of them son of Larry Ellison, billionaire CEO of Oracle. Megan Ellison is behind Annapurna, which is amazing. Yes. Every time you see that A, you're like, yes.
So one of them has taste, the other one does not?
The other one is trying to make money.
Ah, well, you know what? You know, hey, guess what? Wow, man. I'm trying to think. had the tasteful movies made a bunch of money?
A couple of them have, and a couple of them have won awards. Mm. Like, they did Zero Dark Thirty, for mm-hmm. example. So, Annapurna has the prestige and the track record and, I think, a decent commercial track record. Didn't they do Her?
Probably.
I think they did Her. That made a little bit of money. Skydance, however... first off, I'm going to do this. I'm going to read this quote from David Ellison, CEO of Skydance, and then I'm going to talk more about Skydance specifically. David Ellison says, quote, "I will say we have resolved the future of the franchise, and believe me, it's an incredibly bright future. I think where it's going will be the continuation of what the fans really wanted since T2.
Okay.
So he's talking about throwing all the way back James Cameron style.
Please do.
He goes on to say, "We have something this year that we'll be announcing for the franchise. It's something we're incredibly excited about and think is the direction it needs to head." So in the next couple of months, expect another Cinema Crespo so update on the future of the Terminator franchise. Specific future.
Terminator Days of Future Past. we're gonna get rid of all these movies that nobody liked and start with a clean slate. Thank you.
Pretty much, right? That's what it sounds like they're trying to do. Like Nick Stahl? No.
No, we're just forget about him.
No. Sam Worthington?
No. Christian Bale? No.
I mean, we like it, but no. Yeah, exactly. It does sound like that. If we remember, like a month or two ago, James Cameron, he also talked a little bit about Terminator, and he said something really weird and cryptic, which kind of ties a little into what David Ellison says about the bright future of Terminator and the T2 tie-in. But James Cameron said something weird, like, "Oh, the idea we have for the next Terminator movie, it's a reboot and a remake and a sequel and a prequel, and it's the beginning of a new chapter, but it's also going to be the end." It's like he said everything in one sentence.
Well, time travel, bro.
I guess, right? That's what should have been Genesis. Genesis, they had the Terminator go back to the 70s, but then you barely saw it. It was like, I want to see bell bottoms. Skydance Media. I want to talk about them real quick. The movies that they made. Here, to give you an idea of the movies that they make. First off, Skydance Media, David Ellison, he runs it. He's a CEO, but they've got to deal with Paramount Pictures, right? So almost every movie they make is at the very least a co-production with Paramount, and then they also bring in other partners sometimes. So their very first movie was a goddamn home run, True Grit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Made a ton of money. Yeah. I think it may even be the highest grossing Coen Brothers movie, and it won awards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Skydance. Yeah. Welcome to the party, guys. And then they followed up with Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol with Bad Robot and Cruz Wagner.
Yeah.
They went on to do the next Mission Impossible movie, Rogue Nation, and they're producing the next one with Cruz Wagner. So they're on that train. Since they had to deal with Cruz with Mission Impossible, they got in on the Jack Reacher train. So they produced both Jack mm-hmm. Reacher movies, okay? Doing okay. But then remember that Seth Rogen, Barbara Streisand movie, The Guilt Trip?
What the fuck was that?
That was a Skydance movie. That's what that was. They also co-produced with MGM and Hasbro the G.I. Joe sequel, G.I. Joe Town, which somehow was worse than the original. Was worse than Rise of Cobra.
Yeah.
Through the Mission Impossible connection, they hooked up with Bad Robot, so they got to do the last two Star Trek movies, into whatever. Dark. So those are whatever. Yeah. They hooked up with Brad Pitt's Plan B and also GK Films. You've seen that GK mm-hmm. in front of movies, right? And they did World War Z with them.
Okay.
You can already see a pattern of, like, they're going for franchises, big budgets.
And big names.
Big names, 100%.
Yeah, hooking up with established movie stars who have their own production companies now.
Sort of one of their... Actually, after World War Z, they did two... With just Paramount, two Skydance productions. Like, this is what we're putting our shit behind. One of them was Terminator Genesis, which we all saw. Like, it didn't work out too well. The other one was Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruits. It's like,
yeah. I mean, once again, if that had been a better movie, we would have a whole set of these fucking Jack Ryan movies that we did in the 80s.
Which is what they wanted.
Yeah.
Starring Chris Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Costner keeps popping up as, like, the helper. Yep. But no, because it was garbage.
Thank God.
Their slate coming up. I already mentioned Mission Impossible 6, and they've been trying to make World War Z 2 for a while, mm-hmm. although it hit a snag for a minute. the two that they have scheduled for 2017, Life, coming out this very weekend, mm-hmm. which is actually co-production with Columbia and not Paramount, which is interesting. And with Warner Brothers, again, not Paramount. They're getting away from just Paramount, but their other movie that they come out October 20th, 2017. Drew, man, you almost shit your pants when you saw the trailer. It looks so good. Geostorm.
From the producers of all of these crappy movies.
But not the director.
But not the director comes a movie that's somehow going to be worse.
Somehow.
Because we're trying to copy this silly asshole, but we didn't bring him in on it this time.
Right? Like, what? Because he's too busy making that Moonfall movie where the moon breaks apart and it's going to crash on the earth.
Sounds fucking interesting, even though it's going to be a giant piece of shit.
It's going to be so stupid, but at least John Cusack should be in it.
Yeah.
And maybe Woody Harrelson.
At least the fucking Geostorm.
Geostorm.
So stupid.
If you haven't seen the Geostorm trailer yet,
please
look it up online.
Watch it.
And have a good laugh. Although the opening shots of like just the lightning flashing
cool.
in the clouds are
cool.
But then again, it's lightning. I mean, lightning always looks cool.
But then they call it a geostorm, and you're just like, what?
They say it's a geostorm. What the fuck? What the fuck? We're going to end with this. Trying to keep things sort of on theme, on track. Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Mission Impossible 6. Mm-hmm. Working on that. Christopher McQuarrie wrote and directed The Last Mission Impossible. Also did Wave the Gun like 15 years ago. And he wrote the screenplay for Usual Suspects. He's also... supposedly the nephew of my high school chemistry teacher.
Nice.
Which is like, he was like, he wrote some movie, Usual something.
We were
like, Usual Suspects. Like, yeah, hate that.
What?
What? That guy, he's working on Mission Impossible 6, and he dropped, I'm just gonna read the quote. And this is about, you know, when did this start? Did he even do it for the first one? I guess, yeah, the first movie had the bullet train, and then the second movie had all the bike stuff. Did he have a big stunt for the third movie? He did a bit of a, like a base jumping thing in the third movie. The Tom Cruise stunts.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing all the stunts,
okay.
Right? I mean, he's doing the vomit comet shit for the Mummy movie. Actually, you know what? This is David Ellison again. He must have just done some press conference talking about all their shit. David Ellison again from Skydance talking about Tom Cruise, specifically the stunt Tom Cruise is going to pull Mission Impossible 6. Doesn't say what it is exactly, but he does say this. Quote, what Tom is doing in this movie, I believe, will top anything that's come before. It is absolutely unbelievable. He's been training for 1 year. It is going to be, I believe, the most impressive and unbelievable thing that Tom Cruise has done in a movie, and he has been working on it since right after Rogue Nation came out. It's going to be mind-blowing, end quote. Do you think he could have built that up anymore?
No, but now it has to be cooler than being strapped to the side of a cargo plane.
Yes!
For realsies.
Speaking of the moon, Tom Cruise might as well be skydiving from the moon to Earth. That's what I want to see at this point. Something unbelievable and mind-blowing. We strapped him to the side of a plane and flew him 5,000 fucking like miles or whatever, or however far they flew him.
Maybe.
What are they going to do? What are you going to do? Only, actually, I'm going to pull this article back up. You can think about it this way. They know where they're shooting the movie. Well, so what landmarks are in these cities? Paris, London, and New Zealand.
So what, is this motherfucker gonna free climb the goddamn Eiffel Tower and then, like, do, like, a triple axel backflip off the top and land... You know, just stick the landing.
Stick
like,
the landing. But he's going to land on Big Ben somehow.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
And then he's going to discover actual hobbits in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe he'll come across Peter Jackson out there.
That's the stuff. He revives Peter Jackson's career. Oh, my God. Yeah. That would be mind-blowing.
Yeah,
unbelievable,
would.
As a matter of fact. Man, I want to know. Obviously, we'll find out what the stunt is when footage of him doing the stunt comes out like 6 or 8 months before the movie is actually released. So then when the movie does come out and he does the stunt in the movie, we're like, yeah, we've seen this a dozen times already.
Shit.
Sons of bitches. Anyway, so there you go. That's your show. Drew, thank you.
Chris, I have one thing to add.
Please add something.
Chris, have you seen... So, you know how I've always been talking about my Rated R Punisher? I want a really good Rated R Punisher movie.
We got one, though.
But no, I want a really good one.
I like Warzone, but okay.
Here's the thing, Chris. I think I'm going to get it, but not in movie form. I think the Marvel fucking shit on Netflix is going to be what I'm looking for. Have you seen...
Are they going super violent?
Have you seen the prison fight scene for... The trailer for The Punisher on the Marvel?
No.
There's
a trailer? There's a Punisher Marvel trailer?
It reminds me of the corridor scene in Old Boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, except he's in prison.
Interesting.
You should watch it.
I'll check it out. I'll definitely check it out.
It's fucking violent.
I hope The Punisher's good. I want that show to be good.
So violent.
Man, awesome. When are we gonna start watching Iron Fist? The reviews are very mixed.
Once Legion's done, I figure we can start watching it.
Oh shit! Legion starts in 45 minutes. We need to watch that, dude. I heard this week's episode is bonkers.
But are we still a week behind?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, we did episode 6 last week, and episode 7 tonight. Episode 8 is next week, and then the first season is over.
Okay.
Yes, we'll double check. But dude, I heard this week's episode is fucking bonkers, and this whole season's been bonkers. How can this one be more bonkers than the other ones?
I don't know.
That's why we gotta watch it.
Okay, fine.
I can't wait. So we gotta get out of here so I can mix all this shit down and release it and promote it, etc., etc. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, thank you. All right. We're out of here, guys. We'll be back soon with more stuff. Crispy Pizza style.
He's the only movie critic we know. And besides, he works cheap. Let's talk movies with resident movie critic Chris Crespo.
All right, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Curtis. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, you'd be proud of me. I saw two movies. in the last 2 weeks. I saw Arrival, which I want to talk to you about that movie with Amy Adams. And I know we've talked about it. You brought it up when you saw it. But it's one of those movies that kind of...
That was months ago, man. That was forever ago.
I know. I'm just getting around to it now. But in either case, it's one of those movies
that... That was forever ago. It's time to talk about it again. I feel comfortable talking about it again.
What's old is new. What's new is old. But it's one of those movies, though, that leave questions in your head to ponder. And I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit. And also, I saw The Founder with Michael Keaton. And
that's one I didn't get a chance to see, so I would love to hear what you thought about that.
I thought it was a very, very good movie, and I can't get enough of Michael Keaton. I want to see him in many more movies. I really appreciate his acting, his intensity, his acting. Yeah. So what have you seen lately, brother? Let's talk movies.
Well, last weekend, I only got to see one movie last weekend, but it was a pretty big one, literally.
Yeah.
I went and saw Kong Skull Island.
Oh, okay. Literally big. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. Have you seen any of the commercials or marketing for Kong Skull Island, Curtis?
No.
No. The very first trailer that they put out had a very heavy Apocalypse Now vibe. And then they also put out a poster, their IMAX 3D poster. If you look up on Google, like Kong Skull Island IMAX 3D poster, is a one-for-one homage to the Apocalypse Now poster with King Kong's face inserted as Colonel Kurtz and everything. The font is the same. And then when I saw the movie last week, all of those allusions are totally worth it because it really is like, what if Apocalypse Now, like, crossover with a King Kong movie? It's like a war movie. People are going crazy trying to, Samuel Jackson, his character, he's going crazy trying to track down Kong out of revenge. It's like a gorgeous movie. It's super cool. I really, really, really like this movie.
All right. I haven't heard you get this excited about a film since the Mad Max film last year.
Yeah, oh man, Mad Max. You want to talk about Mad Max again? I can talk about that for the rest of the phone call. It's not. Kong Skull Island the thing is, like, Mad Max, I feel, is like almost a perfect movie. I love it unconditionally. Kong Skull Island, I would say it's like a really, really good movie. I wouldn't exactly call it great, at least not at one viewing, but even saying that, because, like, story-wise, it's kind of... It's weird. It's like too many characters in the movie. So the story threads that they have in there aren't all, they don't get enough time. So it's kind of strange. But looking back on the movie and some of my favorite things about it, I kind of love it. Even though I wouldn't say it's a great movie, I still kind of love it.
Well, they would have to deliver something special to go after this movie, franchise, whatever you want to call it, movie subject, because Kong has been done. Dino De Laurentiis had an interesting take on Kong. What was the Kong movie before this movie?
If you want to go backwards, there's the Peter Jackson one that came out in 2005.
Right.
With Jack Black in the Carl Denham role.
That's it.
Yep, and then the 70s, the Dino De Laurentiis one with Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange, Kong climbs the World Trade Center instead of just the Empire State Building. And then my favorite of those three is the original, the 1933 film. Man, I love that movie. I watched that movie for the first time when I was like 13, where you think, 13, 14-year-old kid showing a black and white movie from 1933 should be cynical and like, this is stupid. I fell in love with it, and I watched it over and over and over on VHS, and I still love it. I think it's amazing.
All right. I agree with you with the original movie with Fay Wray. For what it was and what they had to work with, they did a really good job, I thought. But... the only unbelievable part of that whole movie was that, the line uttered at the very end by your typical New Yorker, wasn't bullets that killed the beast. It was beauty or something like that. That just didn't seem realistic. But it was poignant.
Beauty that killed the beast.
Yeah.
Such a poetic line. Yeah. Sure.
If a giant gorilla just fell from the Empire State Building, nobody's saying that. You know what I mean?
Well, Well, as a matter of fact, if you really want to break it down logically, there's a giant ape, a giant gorilla in the middle of the street outside the Empire State Building dead, and there's a crowd of people just standing around and kind of gawking. Like, they're all looking and they're curious, but no one's, like, freaking out. No one's right. Like, oh my goodness, there's a giant monkey in the middle of the street.
Times.
They're just, like, looking at it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a movie, you know. I mean, come on, it's a movie about a giant ape. By that point, he was like fighting huge snakes and spiders, and he was stepping on people. So if you find the end ridiculous, you know, the whole movie is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Kong Skull Island is very similar. It's a ridiculous movie with some crazy characters in it. But it's a lot of fun, and it's really cool to look at, and weird. It's very weird, which is probably why I like it so much. They make some very interesting choices that you wouldn't expect going into a movie like this. So I am now very interested in seeing what this director does next, what kind of movie he wants to follow this up with. But I can definitely recommend it to people that are interested in a fun time at the movie.
Now, hold on. Who is the director? I didn't catch that.
It's a young fella named Jordan Vogt Roberts, who really, this is his second movie. And his first movie was a little indie film that, like, no one saw, but it was good. And then he got this gig, and he knocked it out of the park. And it's making decent.
What was the budget on this movie?
The budget's like $185 million. Wow. So it's going to have to hit like $300-400 worldwide just to look okay on paper. And it's going to be tough because this weekend, the Beauty and the Beast is coming out, and that's going to take up a lot of money. But I think in the long run, the movie is good enough that word of mouth will keep it afloat, and it'll make its money, and Warner Brothers will see it as a justified expenditure. We'll see.
All right.
So this weekend, Beauty and the Beast is coming out, and that's going to make like $150, $160 million, like just opening weekend. It's going to be ridiculous. Maybe a little less, maybe $120, but it's going to make a lot of money this weekend.
All right. Beauty and the Beast. Now, the animated film made a lot of money, came out, I don't know how many years ago. This is a live action.
20 years ago, I think.
Live action retelling of Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, this is what Disney's doing now. They're going back and they're redoing all of their animated stuff live action. They did it with the Jungle Book. They did it with, Maleficent was a prequel to Sleeping Beauty. They're already working on Lion King as we speak. So it's their thing. It's what they're doing. Cinderella, that was a couple years ago.
Do you think that the true creativity is being stifled because they don't want to take a chance on, on something that's not going to bring in a mega bucks, so they're mining, going back for the glory, you know, because it's familiar to people. It's it's probably going to have a good turnout because the demographic was there for the animated one. What do you think that does overall to the movie business?
Well, that's the thing. First off, it's Disney, and they own the box office now. They have for a few years, and they will for a while between these movies that they're doing, all the Marvel movies that they're releasing, and the Star Wars movies that they're making. They own all of that. So when it comes to creativity, I think they're all for creativity as long as it's within their parameters, their Star Wars parameters, their Marvel parameters. Like Disney released. They do Marvel movies, right? But Marvel's doing its own thing. So you can still get something really weird like Ant-Man or Doctor Strange, or the Thor movie that's coming out this year is going to be insanely bizarre. It's a buddy road movie through outer space, and the buddies are Thor and Hulk. It's gonna be a weird movie.
Yeah.
So there's still that room there for creativity, but it has to be in their sandbox because it's Disney, and they're just. They now deal in like billion-dollar entities. You know, they're not making movies; they're making $1 billion at a time. So, if you want real creativity, unfortunately, it's not going to come from the Mouse House because they're just too big.
Yeah. Can I ask you something about Hulk?
Yes.
I get how he turns into the Hulk. How the anger triggers, you know, some sort of biological thing that.
Mutation,
the mutation. I don't get how he gets back to being the regular guy again.
I think it's just when he gasses out, mostly, usually.
Okay.
you know, he's out, he's rampaging, he's doing his thing, and then eventually he's going to get tired. He's a crazy mutant, but it's not like he doesn't need sleep or food, so eventually he gets tired, or in a fight, maybe he'll get knocked unconscious, and then, you know, right. He'll revert back then. I think he also, you know, it's a comic book character. I think the character eventually gets to the point where he can control the mutation. He can get big and small almost at will.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that will be a strange movie, Thor and Hulk road buddy movie.
Yeah.
In space.
Yeah, imagine 48 hours, but set in outer space and with those characters.
I'll tell you what, Hulk is the last guy I would invite on a road trip or even to a dinner party. You know,
yeah.
He's just unpredictable, and I'm not even trying to be flippant here. I mean, if these were real characters, he'd be the last guy I would want to hang with or room with.
Yes, exactly. So, and I think Thor might feel the same way. In the first Avengers movie, they make a point of Thor and Hulk are fighting side by side, no problem. The fight is over. And then Hulk just punches Thor because he feels like it. So, I don't think Thor is going to want to do this. It's something they're going to have to do. And honestly, I don't like the Thor character. I'm not the biggest fan of the other Thor movies, but because of this setup and the people make it, I am overly excited for this Thor movie coming out.
Yeah, let's go.
I can't believe it. I can't believe that I'm excited for a Thor movie.
Well, let's see how it pans out. You know, your intuition is usually pretty good.
Exactly. We'll see how it goes. But first, you got to tell me real quick, what you think of it? So you like The Founder.
I did like The Founder. Well, I like these kind of movies where they tell you how something kind of grew up from nothing, more or less. You know what I mean? And, you know, the rise and, you know, like, or just like biographies, like the movie Ray, you know, how he started one place. And I like the story and the rise.
So it's like a process from start to finish. You see the whole thing.
Yeah. And I also like period pieces, you know, and this one was 1953, 1952 America. And, you know, Michael Keaton he sells machines that make thick shakes, milkshakes. And
nice.
And he's just going to, you know, to hamburger joint after hamburger joint, trying to sell this model that makes five shakes at once. And people are like, I can't even sell two shakes, you know, an hour. Why would I need to make five shakes? And he's noticing why, because it takes forever to get your burger and fries. You know, you're waiting there. There's usually like a teenage element hanging out, you know, at the drive cart, you know, where the girls on the roller skates come up with your food and they put it on the side of your car, door, whatever. Yeah. So he's noticing that, you know, you got some hooligans there. The food takes forever to get out. And when it does come out to you, it's usually wrong. And he's just like, no wonder these guys can't sell too many milkshakes. Who's, you know, it's taking forever. And then, they get a call from the McDonald brothers, two states away, saying they want six of them.
Because they're selling food so fast,
right.
They need a milkshake machine to catch up. Yeah,
right.
That makes sense.
They were innovative, and they designed their own kitchen system so that you could get a burger and fries in 30 seconds. You know, and
right.
And they even made their own
fast food.
Yeah, they made their own tools. They fashioned them out of metal. Sifter and the ketchup gun and all this stuff. So Michael Keaton's character sees Ray Kroc, he plays, sees this.
Yes.
And he's like, you guys don't even realize, because you haven't gone across America like I have, but this is innovative. This could change everything. Your system is amazing. And they're like, well, we're just happy to have a busy, you know, line out down the street every day. You know, we're doing good.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you don't understand. And he's like, and Keaton does a great job of showing the enthusiasm brimming underneath his, you know, under, like, his lips are quivering. Like, he's so excited about it. You don't even know how big this is going to, he already sees 20 years down the road, you know? And
he sees the future.
Right. And so the movie shows the, you know, tug of war he has with the McDonald brothers and everybody else, and how no one's believing him, and he's just got to keep, you know, marching on, and how, you know, what comes to pass. You know, I don't want to give everything else away, but history, you know what happened. But in either case, it's a good movie. And Michael Keaton does a bang-up job, just an awesome job at playing Ray Kroc. Really great.
Man, I really got to get around. I really want to get around to see that. How did you end up watching it? Did you red box it? How did you see it?
Yeah, I ended up red boxing it.
Red box, sorry. Yeah, I'm going to have to hit up that red box then and check that out. You want to talk about Arrival? That's a great movie, huh?
Oh, yeah. All right, so my question is this. If you can remember. Well, you know, because I finally got to see it. So this is This is my question.
Okay.
So you know how Amy Adams is? I don't want to give this away to people who haven't seen it yet. Is it? You know better than I do. Is this in bad taste?
I think at this point it's out. It's been on DVD for a minute. It's open season on spoilers, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So let's give the disclaimer. If you haven't seen it yet, you may turn off your radio at this point for the next 5 minutes.
Then turn it back on. Correct.
Yeah. Right. All right. So basically, how you are led to believe that in the beginning, you know, she has a daughter, the daughter dies, and all of a sudden aliens land, and she's asked to talk to the aliens. And you get it that she has her daughter, she's had the daughter already, the daughter has died, and now, you know, this is, you know, her next thing, the big thing in her life is working with these aliens and and the government and so forth. But then you realize with Jeremy Renner that she hasn't had the baby yet, or had her daughter yet. And it's like a circular thing, which is the theme that they kind of make throughout the film on how the alien language is not linear. You know, it's
because it ties into the way they perceive time. The aliens, like, we see time in a linear fashion. Something happens, you know, on Monday, and then it's Wednesday, and then it's Friday, et cetera, et cetera. They see all the days at the same time. They knew what happened in the past. They know what's going to happen in the future. To them, time is just one thing. So that's what happens to the Amy Adams character. She evolves to that next level. And that's why I like the movie so much. Then you realize that this narrative device, the voiceover and the flashback that we took for granted as to what it means the opposite. We're seeing stuff that's happening in the future. She's telling us about the future that she knows. And it's like, it's almost like a lightning moment when it hits you. It's like, oh man, they took this thing that is used all the time in movies and TV shows, and we're so used to it, and they found a way to flip it and change it into something different in an unexpected way. And I think it's brilliant too.
It's one of those things that I'll probably have to watch again now, knowing what I know. But I thought that was a great device, and I think they made it, you know, available or palpable to people who, you know, not, you know, versed in this concept.
It's done in a way that even if you don't realize exactly what's happening, like down to that degree, you know that, like, oh man, this is like something just happened in this movie. Like, I just got flipped narratively in a way that I wasn't expecting because of my expectations. People don't realize it's because, you know, we're trained. Our visual literacy is trained through what we see as we grow up. So when someone does something innovative like that, it really jumps out at us. I love that. I need to rewatch that movie too. I only saw that one time in theater.
Yeah, that was super fascinating, and I thought Amy Adams did a decent job in that. You know, was that movie even up for any kind of award?
Yeah, for a few. Best Picture and Director, and then some technical awards under that, maybe writing. It didn't win anything, but I didn't expect it to. And the guy who directed that, French-Canadian fella, Denis Villeneuve, huge sci-fi nerd. Arrival is his first sci-fi movie, though. His next one is Blade Runner 2049.
Ah, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, and then the one he's doing after that, he is going to do his version of Dune.
All right. So, yeah, I hope it's a lot better Arrival. Did you like the original Dune?
I haven't seen the whole thing. I've only seen parts of it. I never read Dune. Of all the sci-fi things for me growing up, Dune wasn't one of the things. I am much more into a documentary that came out a few years ago called Jodorowsky's Dune, and it's a movie about this Argentinian filmmaker, Alejandro Jodorowsky, who's considered the father of the midnight movie. And in the 70s, he was going to make Dune, and he got the No, he got everything set up, and then he couldn't get the money for it because it was too weird and it was too different. And this documentary documents the whole thing. If you like movies about process and like about a whole thing from beginning to end, check out Jodorowsky's Dune, Kurt, because it tells you the whole story of how he tried to make this movie, all the stuff he put together, how the movie fell apart, and then how all the things he did, like the team he put together, they went on to make other movies that went on to be like some of the most influential movies of all time.
I see.
Yeah, it's a crazy documentary, Jodorowsky's Dune, so I definitely recommend you check that out, Kurt.
I was a fan of The Police in the 80s, and so the reason I went to see Dune... I hadn't read the book. Yeah, so this was Sting's, like, I don't know if it was his acting debut, but it was his first big meaty part or whatever. And
yeah,
I went there and I was like, I hate this movie. This movie, I hate it, you know? So
A lot of people don't like it. And it's a David Lynch movie. Kyle MacLachlan's in it. Like, it could have been good, but apparently it's not. A lot of people don't like it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Chris, thanks so much for checking in with us. We appreciate you calling in every week. I just want to ask you really quick. Is there something you're going to see this weekend? Give us a heads up.
I'm not going to see Beauty and the Beast. My mom's going to go see it with her sister and sister-in-law.
Okay.
So I'll get her review for the show. I am going to go see a movie called The Belko Experiment, B-E-L-K-O. And it's a movie about there's a big office building. A bunch of people show up to work, and then the building gets like locked down. They're all stuck inside, and then they're forced to have to kill each other Battle Royale style if they want to get out of the building.
Wow.
It's pretty much Battle Royale in an office building. And it looks really gnarly, and I'll be seeing that this weekend.
All right. All right. Well, we'll check it out. All right. Well, Chris, have a wonderful weekend. Let everybody know how they can find out about your podcast and your website.
Yeah, I have a podcast called Cinema Crespediso. People could listen to it if they want to at chriscrespo.com or iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you like Twitter, I'm on Twitter at @IamChrisCrespo.
All right. Thank you so much. I will talk to you in 2 weeks. We got next week off.
Yeah, sounds good. 2 weeks. Talk to you soon, brother.
All right, thanks. That's Chris Crespo from chriscrespo.com and Cinema Crespediso. Our time is soon coming to an end, but stay tuned. We've got programming around the clock. You're listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida. We're excited about our Fox Fest coming up on March 25th on the Mills Lawn here on the campus from 4 to 10 p.m. And one of the artists who I played at the beginning of my show in the 5 o'clock hours, Margaret Glaspie. I like this woman's voice very much. So I'm going to play a song off this album. She'll be playing live at the Fox Fest along with Mind Design, Leisure Chief, and Mag Low. And so here is Memory Street, Margaret Glaspie on the Current Search Show, WPRK, Winter Park, Florida.